Podcasting from the top of the rocks, this is News on the Rocks with Patty Steele.
So something happened to me when we began this podcast that has never happened before.
What's that, Patty?
The equipment crashed.
What?
So we're looking at this as an opportunity to redo what is a wonderful podcast. When I got here, I was exhausted from walking just 12 blocks in the 90-degree heat in New York City today. But here we are in Bryant Park at the Fever Tree Porch with the King of Fever Tree. Wait, what are you? You're not the King of Fever Tree. What is your official title?
I'm officially the CEO of Fever Tree in North America.
The North American CEO.
There you go.
That's like so cool sounding.
So wait a minute. What is this place right now? Is this, do you own this, or does the park own this, or does the city own this, or does the Queen of England own this?
I don't think
the Queen of England.
She may have done at one stage, you know.
That was a long time ago.
So this is owned by Bryant Park, and so they own it. It is a not-for-profit. They then basically have given the operator rights to ARC, so the Bryant Park Grill, who operate and run this. Mm-hmm. And then we are the named sponsors, obviously,
right,
of the Fever Tree Porch, which we started, got alive, you know, August last year. And
this is your second year, sort of.
This was going to be our first full summer, so
I'm
really excited about that.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it was amazing during the winter when they had the winter village and the ice skating rink and all the rest of it.
Oh, so you were out here during the cold weather as well?
We're out here during the cold weather.
They only
close for something like 4 to 6 weeks every year.
So I could come in here and have like a really intense whiskey drink. What would I mix it with if I came to Fever Tree?
I mean, in the winter, ginger beer. I mean, warming, spicy.
You get that little tingle down your throat.
Yeah, fiery.
Right,
you know,
right.
A nice little sort of Kentucky Mule of something like that.
Well, that's what they called me in college.
The Kentucky Mule?
Well, not to be too newsy or too crass, but the shutdown and the quarantine were actually good for business, right?
Well, yes and no. I mean, you know, first and foremost, because, you know, bars and restaurants closed. You know, the idea of social interaction, you know, we do a third of our business in bars and restaurants.
Right.
And, you know, we've lost all these amazing places.
Yeah.
We've lost all these amazing people, like, you know, the bartenders, the mixologists.
Yeah.
And you know, this place has been closed since early March. So, you know, and they were due to reopen.
Right.
And they didn't reopen until a week ago. So, you know, very, very, very sad to lose that.
But so mid-June, sort of, they reopened.
Literally, I think it was about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And we started off just doing takeout. Now you can sit with a limited menu.
Right.
It's very well controlled. I think, you know, they're sanitizing, they're cleansing. You know, they're doing a phenomenal job.
Right.
Back to your question. But what we have seen is a strong shift to people making cocktails, making their own drinks at home, making, you know, simple long mix drinks and experimenting with their whiskeys and their vodkas and their gins,
right,
and their rums.
Like I came here and this is called a Paloma.
Correct. Fever Tree Paloma.
Fever Tree Paloma.
Porch Paloma.
We should preface all of this by telling anybody who weirdly doesn't know what Fever Tree is, because Fever Tree is, in the world, the number one beverage for mixing with spirits.
We're the number one premium mixer globally. We're now available in over 75 countries around the world.
Right.
And every single state in America, which is fantastic.
So, and your mission was to create something that matched the beauty of the creation of the spirits.
Correct.
So you wanted to find something that didn't destroy the spirits. It was interesting because I was reading a thing that said, you know, these people spend all of this time making these great whiskeys and gins and vodkas and all these different spirits. And then about 15 seconds before you throw it down your gullet, they throw in this junk at so many places. I mean, it isn't. I mean, even some decent restaurants and bars, they don't have any sense of how important what.
Well, they still use, in many cases, they still use these horrible soda guns.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're dragging up you know, from the bowels of their building through these horrible lines.
Yeah.
And then mixing it literally, I mean, they call it a post-mix because it's mixed literally there and then. It's basically a syrup mixed with
another syrup,
getting
water
with carbon,
carbonated,
yeah,
and then and you know, injected into your drink. And as you say, you know, a distiller whose life's work has gone into this magical creation of a delicious bourbon or a rum or a scotch or a gin gets destroyed completely the addition of artificial ingredients, high fructose corn syrup, because people didn't care about the mixer,
right?
And yet, you know, and Fevertree was founded with this very simple. Very simple mission, which is if 3/4 of your drink is the mixer, then the mixer deserves at least equal billing in the drink.
And it should be crafted as carefully as the alcohol is, the
crafted
liquor.
Crafted in the same way. So we're very proud that we are, you know, we're non-GMO. We use only, you know, real ingredients, you know, natural ingredients. So in our tonic water, we use quinine from the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Or as we say here, quinine.
You know, in our gingers, we use 3 types of ginger, one from Cochin in India, one from the Ivory Coast, and one from Nigeria. And we believe it's the blend of those three that gives you a really fiery, spicy, peppery.
Both the ginger beer and the ginger ale, you have this like zing. And it doesn't hurt you, but it really revs. Yeah. I mean, I like it even just plain, let alone with mixing it with.
But on a more essential level, how much can you blame this on the, and I want to be careful with what I say, unsophisticated American palate?
But it's not. I don't think it's the American palate. This is the global palate. I mean, the brand started in the UK.
But don't we like really sweet drinks?
I think everybody always says the American palate is slightly sweeter than, let's say, the European palate.
Well, go down south and it's twice as sweet as it is in New York.
But you know, this brand was created in the UK to address, you know, gin and tonic tasting dreadful because. The tonic water had been essentially, you know, over-engineered and cost-engineered down to zero over many, many years. And the levels of quinine were minimal. If you go to look at a lot of the ginger ales, I've done a tasting of, you know, a big ginger ale brand next to our ginger ale, and people think they're drinking Sprite. Sprite, because it's been cost-engineered to a point whereby they're only using artificial ingredients. They're not using real ingredients. There's no real ginger in many ginger ales.
Oh, yeah, you can definitely taste that.
Well, how old is the market of premium mixers? Is this a market you created or just that you own?
So Fevertree was the first mover here. So these two gentlemen, Charles Rolls and Tim Warrilow, met in 2003. Tim wanted to start. Charles had resurrected Plymouth Gin and then sold it. And Tim wanted to start a gin brand. They had a lunch. I think it was a very long lunch. It was clearly a very good lunch. Because during the lunch, they worked out that it wasn't the gin that was the problem. It was the tonic. And so they spent 2 years, believe it or not, researching the history of quinine, the history of tonic water, to really understand how to make the best tonic water in the world. They went to the British Library, and 2 years later, they produced their first product. 2 years it took.
Wow, a lot of experimenting.
A lot of experimenting. So the first product was launched in 2005, and so the company is now, you know, 15 years old.
Gin and tonic has a very long history in the UK. It's really kind of the drink. And you were talking a little earlier about where it came from. Can you tell us that story?
Sure. So I'll tell you the story of the tonic. So tonic is always made with quinine.
Should
always be made with quinine. And the best quinine in the world comes from the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Is it a plant?
Yes. So the quinine comes from the cinchona tree.
Okay.
It's the bark of the cinchona tree. And you extract the essence from that bark to get quinine. And, of course, in the colonial days of the British Empire, British soldiers would be stationed and posted all over the world.
Sure.
And they were often afflicted by malaria.
Mm-hmm.
And they would be given every single day a ration of gin.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd be given some of this cinchona bark, a little bit of sugar, and they would drink it as a gin and tonic.
Medicinal.
Medicinally, to ward off the effects of malaria. And the great story about the brand is the fact that the name Fevertree comes from the name that the locals give it in the Democratic Republic of Congo, because it quells the fever of malaria.
Wow.
Hence, the cinchona tree is called the Fevertree.
Fevertree.
So the brand's name is rooted in, you know, being 100% natural, authentic, right from the very source.
It is. I just had over at my house yesterday a really dear friend whose mother is a great golfer and just a really incredibly lovely lady. And every single day, she has a bottle of Fevertree. And I was that really, you know, I said, oh, how did you know about it? She's 97 years old. Mm-hmm. And she said she does it because it helps leg cramps.
Yeah, correct, correct.
I didn't know that.
It's bizarre. I mean, I hadn't heard that much until I came to America. And what's amazing is there's even some doctors that actually recommend and say, no, you should, I mean, no, that you should drink it because the quinine is going to help against
you're supposed cramps. To keep, and this is no fooling, you're supposed to keep a bottle of it by your bed if you get one of those searing leg cramps.
And a bottle of gin?
No. Just the tonic water for the cramps.
Wow.
But do you think these better mixers are why gin is more popular, or why has gin become...
Yeah, now
is
finally
gin,
the U.S.
Is gin the in it drink now?
I think, I mean, what's amazing about America is the diversity of palates here.
Yeah.
You know, tequila's popular here. Bourbons and whiskeys and scotches and ryes, and then the, you know, aperitivos, the, you know, the Aperols of the world. And then all the gins, vodkas, rums. I mean, the diversity of spirits in America is probably second to none anywhere else.
Really? That's
interesting. We're number one.
Yeah. There you go. No, I mean, honestly, I mean, and yet, you know, gin, you know, I mean, cognac is huge here.
Yes.
And I think it's because of the diversity of the population, the diversity of the people, the diversity of cultural backgrounds, the diversity of influences. But gin is very much on the rise. And you're seeing the rise really coming through premium gin. Premium gin consumed, yes, in cocktails, but also as a simple long mixed drink with tonic water. And,
sure.
You know, what's been fascinating for me is to see the way that it's evolving and the way it's developing, because our sales of things like our elderflower tonic water,
which is, we reduce
the levels of quinine to take out some of the bitterness, and then you get that natural sort of light floral aspects of the elderflower coming into the tonic, which just makes the gin and tonic a little bit more accessible for the American palate. The same with our Mediterranean tonic, which has got lemon, thyme, and rosemary in it.
Mm.
Or the cucumber tonic, which is a light one, so it's lower in calories.
See, I'm anxious to get that because I have spent more time muddling cucumber into my Hendrix and then just pouring in regular. So I need the...
But there you go. You see, now, but you're somebody who will take the time to muddle cucumbers.
Oh, absolutely.
Most of us won't.
Right,
you know, most
right.
of us are far too lazy to do that. and so the light cucumber tonic, we've already done that work for you.
Yeah.
You see
yeah.
what I mean? We've done that work because we've blended cucumbers into the quinine in the perfect proportions to ensure that you're... gin and tonic, your vodka and tonic. Do you know how I love our cucumber tonic? Aperol. Because quite often people don't want to have an Aperol spritz because they don't want to open a full bottle of Prosecco.
Right.
But if you want to have just one or two of an evening,
right,
then the light cucumber tonic balances that, the Aperol, beautifully, creates this very refreshing.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
Calorie,
right.
And it's low low calorie, low sugar, and low alcohol drink.
Right.
So, beautiful on a summer's day. Aperol and cucumber tonic, I highly, that's what I drink at home.
Let me ask you another question. One of my many bosses on the TV side, he likes smoky drinks.
Mm.
Smoky scotches, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was tasting some, and it's like you feel like you're drinking charcoal. What is the appeal of smokiness?
They have a smoky ginger ale, yeah.
And
I think, I mean, you know, again, it's, I mean, you know, you look at Islay malt whiskies, you look at mezcals, you know, you look at those things. Those are, you know, I mean, they're wonderfully complex. They're beautiful drinks. I mean, for me, I enjoy one or two. And, you know, we made a smoky ginger ale, adding some applewood smoked water, or using applewood smoked water.
And what do you put in that?
Alongside, what do you mix it with?
Yeah.
You can mix it with something like a mezcal to go, you know, double smoke, as it were. Or right. you mix it with like an Ardbeg or a Lafroig, if you're looking for a long mixed drink there. But frankly, also, it tastes great with a scotch.
All right.
Great with a bourbon.
Yeah.
And just adds a bit of difference, you know?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
about variety.
And you taste the smoke?
Oh, yes. Very much so.
Wow, wow.
I mean, my favorite of our ginger ales is the spiced orange, which has takes our three gingers. And then to that, we've added some cold-pressed South African clementines for the orange flavor.
Right.
And then steam-distilled Sri Lankan cinnamon to give you the spiciness. And that was designed specifically to go with a brand like Hennessy VSOP and to really bring out all those wonderful cognac flavors. And if you think of cognac, orange, and ginger, those three flavor combos are just sensational together.
It's like being in a kitchen when you have great ingredients to make some dish. So it's really the same mentality. It's everything you add to what you start, the beautiful ingredients you start with, is meant to just light it up.
But yeah. I'm hearing a lot of words that I can understand and spell, meaning they're natural and there's no preservatives.
Yeah.
Talk about this movement toward healthier or, as you call it, better for you drinking.
Well, you know, we all know when we go out to have, you know, a bar to have a drink, you know, it's a guilty pleasure. You know, we always say, you know, at the end of the day's work, you know, that affordable everyday treat is my first drink after work. It's that moment of refreshment. But equally, you know, we're very health conscious these days. You know, we have endless gym memberships and we've got Pelotons at home, and we're, you know, like to keep ourselves fit and healthy.
Right. Right.
And so when we're having our guilty pleasures, you know, we like to know what we're doing. And
right.
I think the great thing about, you know, this simple long mixed drink is that you know exactly what you're putting into your body. We also know that we want to put natural ingredients into our body, not artificial ingredients. We want to put real sugar. If we're going to have sugar, we want to put real sugar in there, not high fructose corn syrup, because it's heavy and it's chlorine. It's hard for the body to
break it
down.
Also masks the flavor of whatever it's in.
Correct.
Yeah,
it kills the flavor because it weighs so heavily.
But that might be
palate.
Why they put it in, because it's masking bad flavor.
Yeah. and so it's you know, it's so important to have, you know, authentic, real ingredients. You know, we're very proud to say that, you know, we go to the ends of the earth to source the very best ingredients. You know, the Paloma, the Porch Paloma that you're drinking.
Oh, so
you
delicious.
You know, we use the best grapefruits in the world, which we believe come from Florida.
Grapefruit tonic and tequila. Really.
Oh, it's delicious.
Incredibly refreshing without any of the crazy bite that you can sometimes get from tequila.
And this was you know, designed again to be a low calorie drink.
Right.
So you got low in calories, simple drink with loads of flavor and loads of taste. The tequila's a hero in this drink,
right.
But equally the grapefruit's the hero. And that's when you get the balance right. When you get the balance wrong, which I think you do with a lot of these syrup guns,
right.
You don't taste the whiskey anymore. You don't taste the gin anymore. You don't taste the spirit.
Right.
So the spirit is being disrespected.
Yes.
By using, you know, by using artificial, whether it's at home or whether it's in a bar.
So when you guys first got started, was the idea more about servicing high-end bars and restaurants and not as much in the beginning home? Or did you think about that right off the bat? Because now is the perfect time to make that transition into creating a wonderful opportunity at home to create these $18 or $20 drinks for a lot less because you're at home.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the answer is both. Uh-huh. You know, people, you know, love to go out to bars. They love, you know, we all love going out to bars. We love going to restaurants. We love the experience.
Sure.
We love the theater. We love being served a great drink.
Right.
We love, you know, most of our first experiences of drinks come in bars.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's wow, what shall I have? And the, you know, the
they recommend?
Well, the number one question asked in a bar is, what do you recommend?
Mm. Right.
What's your house special? Yeah. What's your favorite?
Right.
You know? And so that's where that's really important for us, mm-hmm. to be in the bars, on the menus, listed there. But equally, you made the point already, but, you know, people love to be at home, and when they have guests around, or when they're on their own, mm-hmm. as we have been a lot, sadly, recently,
right.
We like to have that affordable, everyday treat at home.
Right.
We love to replicate that bar experience.
Right.
And how many times have we sadly been to friends' parties where they've got some of the finest lineups of spirits,
yeah.
and then they've got these horrible liter bottles of mixers
yeah.
to... which destroy these spirits. I mean, I go to
right.
most of these parties, and if
and
I see those...
And all the sparkle leaves after the first couple of drinks. And
sparkle leaves, you're left drinking flat, heavy syrup.
Yeah, just sugar
and
water.
So you just said, just give it to me on the rocks.
Right.
And then you're not enjoying it as much because you want to have, you know, two or three drinks, but you want long drinks. You want refreshing drinks.
Yeah.
You want clean drinks. You
yeah.
want drinks. Back to the better for you point is that you want a drink that you're going to enjoy and that... and that's not going to do you, you know, more. It's not going to overdose you on your calories for the night,
right.
or whatever it is, whatever, with, however your brain works.
Well, yeah, for no reason.
For no reason.
Yeah.
You know, isn't it, now this again is getting very medical. Seems like the real sugary drinks, like mm-hmm. rums,
right.
give me headaches. There's just so much sugar, and then the more sugar, it's all sugar on sugar, it's harder for my brain.
Could that have to do something with the brand that you're drinking? Or is
know,
it just purely
like,
the way it's made?
Vodka is easier on my brain than anything with a lot of sugar. Huh. That's why when I add a lot of sugar, I have to be very careful.
See, I drink gin, not I drink vodka, but I drink gin because, weirdly, it makes me happy. I can't explain that. It has that impact on me when I drink it. It's just...
That's great. I mean, I think it's funny because we all have this strange... We have spirits that we love
and chemistry
make us feel
that
great.
Yeah.
And then we have things that, you know... And it could be it's a reference point from your first experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, often people's first experience with alcohol necessarily isn't a good one. And no, just
in the back seat of a car.
Yeah, whatever.
Out of a box.
Yeah, but it's not. And so what happens is we kind of form relationships with things that we go, I like this, I don't
yeah.
like this, I like the other, I don't, you know. And some people like certain things and then suddenly you say, no. And that's two very interesting reactions. One to gin, because some people would say, "Oh, gin makes me very sad," and you go, "It makes me happy."
Yeah.
And some people would say, "Rum gives me energy," and you would say, "Rum gives me a headache." So there you go.
It's your body chemistry.
I genuinely think there's a lot.
Yeah.
Well, then let me ask you this question: shaken or stirred?
Well, you see, as a man who ran a vodka brand, and. But as a man who also did the last James Bond movie, Spectre, I believe that there's a martini out there with your name on it, the way you like it,
mm-hmm.
whether that's shaken, whether that's stirred, and both of them to me, and the purists will tell you absolutely stirred, and the people looking for a bit more vibrancy and energy will always
love
go
that shake.
Love the shake, love the energy of the shake, and
right.
we love the theater
and the icing
shake.
Wait a minute, back up.
Whereas the stirring, so it takes far too long. So but there's times when you really appreciate a stirred martini versus a shaken martini.
But were you the villain, Inspector? What do you what do you mean?
No, I wasn't.
Dropped that in.
Hello,
there.
He was James Bond.
I did the last.
I was not James
what
Bond.
What do you mean? What did you do for the movie?
No. So my last role, I used to run Belvedere Vodka globally,
uh-huh.
and we were the vodka partner for Spectre, which was the last movie, was one of the most fun experiences of my entire life.
So what did that mean? Were you on set? Were you?
No, we got, you know, we got.
You did all the parties.
We did all the parties.
See,
we did the premieres. We did the, you know, the premiere at the Royal Albert Hall, and then the after party at the British Museum.
Oh, Lord.
We did an amazing event in Mexico because...
That scene in Mexico. Whoa.
It was amazing. And the Bond girl, Stephanie Sigman.
Yeah.
She was the first ever Mexican Bond girl.
Right.
So they did the premiere for the North American market mm-hmm. in Mexico City, and it was the same weekend as the Grand Prix, the Formula One Grand Prix. So it was the Day of the Dead weekend. So it was the craziest weekend
ever. You have the worst possible run of jobs, don't you?
That was a very bizarre weekend.
Wow.
Oh, you loved every minute of it.
I loved every second of it. It was hilarious.
The Day of the Dead. That's so great.
Yeah. Does Daniel Craig like Belvedere?
I don't want to speak for Daniel Craig, but, I'm
very
sure he's
PC
a man,
of you.
I'm sure he's a man of exceptional taste, so I'm sure he does. Yeah,
and he loves Fever
Tree. I'm sure he does, too. Yeah. Well, being a good Brit, he should.
So are you getting, what is the response right now with everything sort of under lockdown? Do you guys get word from the public? Do they have a way to reach out to you? Or
yeah,
what
I mean,
they...
people. I mean, people are reaching out to us. I think what's interesting is people are asking us every
day
how to make a great tasting drink at home.
You have so many great recipes on your website. Yeah. It is the sexiest drink website I think I've ever seen.
We've been doing a lot of work through Google on YouTube, actually telling the brand story,
right?
Which is great. And that's helping people go, oh, wow, I wonder how to make this. I wonder how I could make that. I wonder how to make the other. And then when we feature drinks on things like our Instagram page, or we feature, you know, drinks, and we've had partnerships with the likes of Punch, Imbibe. One of the best pivots that I saw during this whole time was Time Out, which moved from Time Out to Time In.
Yes.
And they literally changed the name of the magazine. Right, we're now going to be Time In. And we were doing some stuff with them, and they started, look, here's six great ways to do this. For Cinco de Mayo, we obviously did a lot around the Paloma.
Sure.
How to make, you know, great Palomas, great, you know, they were doing something on Palomas and margaritas and how to make great tacos and everything at home to have your own, you know, Cinco de Mayo party.
Now, you have some lemonades, too.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Well, what do you do with those?
So we have two, we have a sparkling lemon, which is delicious. In fact, we have it here with vodka.
Mm.
Really, really nice. Very, we use Sicilian lemon, so it's very kind of tart, delicious, natural lemonade. And then we have a lemon tonic. And bizarrely, this used to be called bitter lemon.
Mm-hmm.
But consumers today, people...
The word bitter scares them?
Scares them.
Yeah.
So we changed the name to Lemon Tonic, and the sales improved overnight because they're, oh, wow, I'd love to try that. So that's a weird
We're
one.
We're so naive.
No.
I hear you.
It's like bitter lemon.
It's new. I mean, there are, I know in Whole Foods, there are certain fishes that they used to sell under certain names and found that people were like, ew, you know, why do I want a mudfish or whatever they called it? And then suddenly they change it to flower fish and everybody wants to buy it.
Yeah. No, I think it is. It's all about perception.
Marketing, yeah, and perception.
How does somebody get your job? What an interesting career you've had.
Why are you trying to take his job?
Do you have like... telling you that.
Watch out.
Do you have like a master's in mixology or what?
How did I get into this? I think I fell into this like probably every experience of my life. I've been very fortunate. I've been very lucky in my career. I started my life as a soldier, believe it or not, in the British Army. I was an officer in the British Army for...
That's cool.
6 years.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you. And then I left and I thought, well, what have I learned? You know, I've learned a lot about bars and alcohol and drinking. So I...
That was my brother in the Army. He learned to drink vodka in Russia, of all places.
But I was always fascinated about sort of people's behavior and behavioral change. And so I found myself in the alcohol industry. I started at Bacardi when it was a single brand company.
Wow.
They didn't own anything else. They only owned Bacardi rum.
Wow.
And it's still a family company today.
Is it really?
Yep. Still a family.
Wow, lucky them.
Yep. But today they have brands like Patron and Grey Goose and Dewars.
Oh, I didn't know
that. Saint-Germain. Oh, yeah.
Wow, Saint-Germain.
Along with the Bacardi brand. So they've become a mega global company, an amazing company. But I started with them when they were a single brand company. Then I went to Diageo, which owns things like Johnny Walker and Gordon's Gin, Tanqueray, obviously Bullet Bourbon now here in the US, Smirnoff. And then I finished my alcohol career at Moët Hennessy. So, you know, with beautiful champagnes and stunning cognacs and amazing whiskies like Glenmorangie, Ardbeg, and then, you know, I was running Belvedere Vodka globally. So I always say that as my alcohol career went along, my drinks cabinet got better and better and better.
Now you have a lock on it, right?
And this was my way to pivot from being in the, you know, wines and spirits industry, where I think I'd done my dash, or my dash had done me, I wasn't sure. Because I would often find myself in places like Las Vegas or Cannes at some film festival. I was the oldest person in the nightclub by a long way, sometimes by like 20 years. So I thought it was time to do something else. And I'd had the good fortune of meeting Tim and Charles when they were starting up Fevertree.
Right, right.
And I actually mandated that anywhere in the world where we did an event, mm-hmm. Fevertree had to be the mixer for Belvedere Vodka.
Wow.
Because it made Belvedere taste its very best.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the mission at Fevertree is to make everybody's drink, any sure. drink, taste better.
Sure.
And so, you know, when you're running a global brand in 120 countries around the world, Fevertree today is in about 75 of those. So, you know, it was great that we were able to partner. And, you know, they came to talk to me about, would you like to run the North American business? And, you know, an amazing opportunity in a fantastic country with, you know, so much
Is this
potential.
The first time you've lived here?
So, I've been living here. I've been living here now for, 11 years.
Okay.
I moved here in 2009 in
Do
the middle.
Do you like us?
Love it here.
What's he going to say?
No, I have an American son.
Okay.
He was born here.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I like that.
So I actually used to describe myself as a Scotsman running a Polish vodka.
Right.
Working for a French company.
You're like the United Nations.
Yeah. Wait, I haven't finished yet. Oh. Married to an Australian.
What? And who's also in the high end of the business.
Father
right?
of a U.S. citizen.
And father of a U.S. citizen and an English daughter.
So a pillow talk at home, is it all about liquor?
You'd be very bored, I think.
You know, I'm going to ask you something totally unrelated, because you've said a word that intrigues me. You say the word pivot. So this horrible pandemic, this horrible unrest in the country has a lot of people reevaluating their lives. But what I'm hearing from you is we should not be afraid to pivot and make
right.
big changes.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think whether it's in business, whether it's personally, you know, humans are, I mean, we are phenomenal creatures. We should celebrate ourselves every single day. We are amazing.
I do.
We are amazing creatures yeah. because we have the ability to change direction.
Yes.
To be flexible, to innovate.
And to use your difficult moments
yeah, correct,
to improve yourself.
You know, to innovate, to become, you know, more creative, more dynamic. And so, yes, I mean, God, we all hate what's happening at the moment in the world. But sitting at home and feeling sorry for yourself, or, you know, crying yourself to sleep at night, I don't see that. What I see is businesses. I see people coming up with amazing ideas of
ways
to do things. Yeah. You know, bars saying, right, we'll do takeaway drinks for you. Restaurants saying, we'll prepare the food for you. You pick it up and just cook it at home.
Yes.
I mean, isn't that amazing? Isn't
I
that
love
wonderful?
That. I did that with one restaurant. It was really great.
You also see, I think, the best of humanity. You know, this aspect of, you know, community. You know, people giving back. You know, these amazing chefs. You know, Jose Andres.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Daniel Ballou. You know, oh. Eric Reaper.
Yes.
All these guys who've got these stunning businesses. And what have they done? They've gone, we're going to serve our community. Our community served us well. We're going to give back to our community. And I just think that is so, that's so much about what the human spirit's about. And we will get through this, but things will look different the other side. Things look different the other side after the financial crisis
yes.
in 2008, 2009.
Sure.
Things look different in New York after 9/11.
Yes.
Things look different, you know, after, you name it, whatever happens.
Yeah.
But we can all look back over the events of our lives, you know, and we've all experienced it. I mean, you know, I was living in Germany when the Berlin Wall came down. I moved to Poland in 1992, just after the wall had come down, and was one of the frontiersmen into the former Eastern Bloc, the communist
right.
Eastern Bloc.
Wow.
Look at Poland today. It's the most
vibrant,
you know, vibrant, dynamic.
Yeah, all the beauty has come to life.
All the beauty's come, all that suppressed beauty has come to life. Why? Because of people, because of the human spirit, our ability to be flexible, our ability to innovate, and our love of community. And I really see that.
And John and I have talked about this. The difficulties, and I talk to my kids about this, the difficulties that you face in life are a blessing, because when everything is status quo, it's okay. You know, things are going on, you're great, whatever. But when you're delivered a real challenge, you have the opportunity to face that and say, what do I have to learn from this?
Yeah.
And once I learn it, how can I share it? And I think that is essential. And I think that we can 100% apply that to this time. Mm. I see people coming up, even in our business, with new ways of communicating, new ways, and in funny ways, kind of simplifying what we used to do. I mean, John, you see this particularly in television.
Yeah.
It used to be big studios with lights and all these computers and all this other stuff. And suddenly, he's doing the weather from his backyard in the fire pit with flowers
around. I see people making podcasts on machines that never...
No, I'm going to hit
isn't
you.
Isn't that brilliant?
Yeah.
Isn't that brilliant?
It's wonderful when they work.
No. Of course. But, you know, I just think, you know, I think that, yes, life is horrible at the moment. None of us are enjoying this time. But we have to, we will change. We will adapt. We will adopt. And we will overcome.
And look for the lessons.
And we will absolutely, you know, heed the lessons from it. So I'm, you know, and the other thing is, and you saw this, you know, going into the financial crisis of 2008, 2009, the whole world was about excess. Yeah. You know, you'd go, everywhere you went, there was excess spending, there was excess celebration. Everything was done to, you know, in the absolute excess.
Yeah.
You know, life, every part of life looked like a bit of Vegas with people spraying champagne around.
Yeah.
Living this massive life.
This huge.
Huge life, living large and whatever it was. And what came out of the financial crisis was authenticity, craft, roots, community, a more caring. And how did that affect alcohol? Well, the rise of craft brands. No longer was it cool just to have the biggest, sexiest, you know,
everybody knows it kind
everybody
of.
Knows it brands.
Yeah.
You know, now it was all about discovery and I've discovered this new amazing local gin or this new amazing local whiskey that's made by the guy down the road, and I don't want to support big corporate, I want to support small business and small brands, you know. And it was amazing to see that. And then of course the big brands, what do? Started acquiring the small brands.
Yeah.
Right.
But guess what? That drove entrepreneurialism for more and more people to give it a go.
To create.
And that's what's the best thing about America is America embraces entrepreneurialism.
Yes.
In a way that no other country in the world does.
Look for opportunities.
Everybody loves you for having a go. Everybody loves you for, you know, giving it a good shot.
Yeah.
And nobody gives anybody a hard time for trying and failing. They give you a hard time for doing nothing.
Kind of tease you about it, but everybody really appreciates someone.
We do love entrepreneurs.
We
in this
do.
Country.
Everybody
we do.
Loves somebody. You know, look at Elon Musk.
Yep.
He'll start to launch something and it'll blow up, and then 2 months later he'll launch
right
it
right back
it's,
at it,
and it's fabulous. And it there it goes. So what a wonderful opportunity we had to sit here in Bryant Park on this beautiful day. And now that we've been here so long, it's cooled off.
And do you edit these by any wild chance?